morning. It is 6:41. This is KDNK Carbondale, and here's your KDNK local news for this Friday, November 24th. I'm Steve Cole. Carbondale trustees Ben Baumfock and Marty Silverstein recap Tuesday's meeting with KDNK's Bob Schultz and Jeff Dickinson on Wednesday. One major issue discussed at the meeting was the town's budget. Ben Baumfock starts off the discussion.
We're very close on a budget. We agreed to maintain 75% of our annual spending in reserves. That allows us to transfer some from reserves over to capital to just keep things going, basically. But there's no big, fancy new projects on the agenda for next year. And that 75% figure means we could get through three quarters of a year with zero income, zero revenue, which would, you know,
be rather unlikely.
Yeah, but it's a healthy amount. It's much more than any of our other municipal governments in the area. It's a little bit less than we've had in the past, but that's a number that we're comfortable with, and that I think we kind of set a standard that we'll probably stick to for the next few years.
The City Market project, you know, has been postponed for the time being, and hopefully once that comes online, our sales tax revenue, which is the biggest source of funding for the town, will increase. We're playing catch up from the lean years, especially on some of these capital projects. And one of our big roles is safety. And safety is sidewalks, it's roads, it's water and sewage, all those not very sexy things, but things that are necessary for the town to function. While I can't promise that we won't go into reserves next year, the goal is that we won't have to go into reserves. And unfortunately, we've postponed a lot of projects, a lot of maintenance projects, to get through some lean times. And some of them, we just can't postpone anymore.
What do we do different? I mean, City Market will see an increase in some sales tax, but, you know, that's probably not enough to be a game changer in terms of these, you know, responsibilities we have for owning millions and millions of dollars worth of assets.
City Market is not going to cover all of our needs. And this is something we as a town is going to have to address the next year or two. And we as a board are going to have to address it, you know, sooner than that.
We've got to have a better long-term solution. This is an unusual year because we've really gotten down to so little on the severance tax. And for listeners who don't know, that's when oil and gas is drilled on public lands within the county. And we get a little slice of that revenue that was really high during the recession, which really kind of helped us float through the worst economic
crisis. Saved Carbondale's bacon,
yeah.
Ironically.
That's right.
Given our attitude about oil and gas development.
That's exactly right. So now we're seeing what it looks like to basically watch that wither away. Maybe that'll increase again. Who knows? But we certainly can't count on it. So we're going to have to be very self-sufficient and just kind of make ends meet.
So the final adoption is at your next meeting?
Final adoption is it December 13th? Is that right? December 13th meeting, yep.
Town trustees Ben Baumfock and Marty Silverstein discussing this week's meeting on the Merlin Chameleon Show on Wednesday. Videos of town trustee meetings are available at carbondalegov.org. On this week's News Brief, News Director Gavin Dahl talks to an education reporter from Chalk Beat, Colorado, about the Democrats taking control of Colorado State Board of Education for the first time in nearly 50 years.
Eric Gorski is Bureau Chief of Chalk Beat, Colorado, a nonprofit news organization focused on public education. Thanks so much for speaking to KDNK.
Thanks for having me.
So Democrats will have partisan control of the State Board of Education for the first time in nearly 50 years. Why is the Board of Education so significant?
So the State Board of Education doesn't get a lot of attention. It was truly a down ballot race this year, and basically any year that someone is up for election for the board. But it does play a key role in the system, our public education system in Colorado. Basically, the board's responsibilities are to kind of set the rules and regulations at the state level based on the laws enacted by the state legislature. It hires and fires the state education commissioner, oversees the Colorado Department of Education, which is a large agency that has kind of transformed in recent years from something that was a highly regulatory body, regulatory focused, to more being kind of a support system for especially rural schools, which I think would be of interest to your listeners. It also has a say over charter school appeals. So those are kind of the main responsibilities of the state board.
So tell us about the State Board of Education race that this entire power struggle came down to. I mean, Rebecca McClellan, sure. former city councilwoman from Centennial, she was supported by both teachers' unions and education reformers.
That's right. The race that really decided, that without a doubt decided the partisan direction of the board was in the 6th Congressional District. And the way that the state board is elected is that the board members, the 7 board members, represent Colorado's congressional districts. The 6th Congressional is the most tightly contested of them all. It's pretty much evenly divided between Democrats, Republicans, and non-affiliated voters. Borders were redrawn and redistricting since the last election for this seat. So what used to be safely Republican is now considered more of a toss-up. What happened was we had a dogfight, really, between the Democrat, Rebecca McClellan, who, as you noted, had the support of both the teachers' union and, I think, more support, at least financially, from the education reform community, in particular a political action committee affiliated with Democrats for Education Reform. She also ran on a platform that really emphasized that she would be the only parent of a kid in public schools sitting on the board.
And so who's likely to be the new leader of the State Board of Education?
That we don't know. Of course, it should be a Democrat. That's how these things work. The party takes control. They elect one of their own. If tradition were to continue, that would be Angelica Schroeder of Boulder, who's the current vice chair.
Talking to Eric Gorski, bureau chief of the nonprofit news organization Chalkbeat Colorado, focused on public education. You guys have reported that some of the agenda of the State Board of Ed will remain unchanged. The plan for low-performing schools, for example. But it sounds like academic standards could be a big subject in 2017.
It could be. So the state's academic standards by law are up for review, and the Common Core are part of those standards. Now, that's a term people throw around a lot, the Common Core. What the Common Core is, they're a set of academic standards in math and English language arts that were developed by states, by a group of states, to try to bring some consistency across the board. They're not a federal program. They were incentivized by the Obama administration, but they're not a federal. It's not a federal thing that can be done away with a wave of the wand. Donald Trump has campaigned against the Common Core. We shall see what, if any, kind of impact his election will have on the Common Core. In Colorado, Colorado's academic standards are more than just math and English, but as part of our standards, the Common Core, the state adopted the Common Core standards in math and English as our own. So they remain politically divisive. You know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out with Democrats in control. I think it's safe to say that the Common Core is on firmer ground here. But there's also a big question, regardless of party, whether it's a good idea to scrap this, right? If you listen to educators, they have been adapting to this change and to these new and different standards, this new and different kind of way to teach. You hear oftentimes that they don't want to start from scratch with something entirely new. Another thing that we've seen in other states that have scrapped the Common Core standards and adopted their own end up adopting standards that aren't that different from the Common Core. So there's, you know, concern about the cost of such an effort as well.
Could this shift in power at the State Board of Education affect the growth of charter schools?
Sure. The place of charter schools in this state is mostly a local decision, right? It depends on the relationship between superintendents, where boards stand, history. A lot of different factors come into play regarding how prominent charters are in a local school district. You know, where I'm sitting in Denver, charter schools are really a big part of the fabric of the public schools in the district, in Denver Public Schools. In other places, there are, you know, frostier relationships. It depends somewhat on the teachers' union and, you know, what kind of sway the teachers' union might have. Teachers' unions, you know, in general being hesitant about charters, to say the least, skeptical. The thing about education policy is that it's not easy to pigeonhole people by party. You can have people in the Democratic Party who are open to charter schools and opposed as well. And we see that on this board. Within the Republican Party, there's generally going to be support for school choice, and that means charter schools, and in some cases that means school vouchers. You won't see that kind of support in the Democratic Party for vouchers. So it just, the kind of the complexities playing out around those issues are very evident on the state board.
And so by vouchers, you mean using public money for faith-based schools?
Not just faith-based, but private schools generally. In other states, in other cities, states like Indiana, cities like Milwaukee, when you've got private school vouchers, it basically is taking public money, giving it to parents, and having their kids go to private schools. There hasn't been much movement in Colorado in that direction. And the biggest experiment or the biggest effort to do so in Douglas County, where, frankly, the schools are already pretty good, really good, has been tied up in court and right now held up. And so there's really no real movement in this direction in this state. It'll be interesting to see what happens on the federal level with, potential candidates for the education secretary job. Who are quite, enamored with vouchers.
Yeah, it sounds like Michelle Rhee has said she won't work for the Trump administration. So that's good news for teachers unions who are opposed to education reform, but who knows who's next on the list. So,
if they were worried about Michelle Rhee, they might have greater concern from some other people's names who've been mentioned who are in favor of school vouchers, which would be, a whole other territory beyond charter schools.
Mm-hmm. So one last question is just looking at the timeline. Now that we have the election results complete and we know that the State Board of Education will be under Democrat control, what's next in terms of what's on the calendar?
We'll be looking to January when the board convenes, when Rebecca McClellan is sworn in. At that time, there'll be a vote on board to decide the leadership.
Eric Gorski, Bureau Chief of Chalkbeat, Colorado, will link to their coverage of the State Board of Education race. Thanks so much for getting us up to speed here at KD&K.
Thanks for having me, Gavin.
Since recording this interview, President-elect Donald Trump has named philanthropist and anti-gay activist Betsy DeVos as the next education secretary. She has neither worked in publication nor chosen public schools for her own children who attended private Christian schools. It looks like school vouchers may become a key federal policy initiative next year.